Bring a Trailer podcast.
Welcome back to the Bring a Trailer podcast, everybody. Alex here, excited to be joined at Bring a Trailer World headquarters by Howard Swig, head of auctions. How are you, Howard?
A brand new edition of the podcast. Alex, I'm great. I have not done one of these in a few months. So I've also just returned from a full 90K service at the dentist. So that's taken the edge off a little bit. But I've really appreciated that you've fully taken up the mantle on the BAT podcast. I think you really have the gift of gab. I enjoy listening to you. And today I can chat with you and have some fun.
Oh, I'm excited, man. And thank you for saying that. That's really kind. Have you done one in 2024? It has been a little bit.
I have. I had Chubba Cheddar on.
Oh, that's right. That was a fan favorite.
But man, the months go by, Alex. It's actually quite frightening.
Yeah, you're not a kid anymore, Howard. Neither of us are. You've been on the East Coast for quite some time. I think the last time I saw you was when I was in New York.
Yeah, quite some time. A few months. I was back here in January and back for a few weeks. I'm doing a car event next week, the California Mille. We can chat about that. You were just down in Phoenix last weekend at our alumni gathering there, which I sadly had to miss, but that looked like a huge success. Huge turnout, maybe the record number of cars at any alumni gathering ever. 300, 400?
Yeah, do you remember the one we did in Seattle a couple of years ago where there was beautiful weather and like way more cars showed up than we thought? We had to like move the barriers and close down the streets. It was a very similar vibe. Like we were bleeding into other businesses' territory and the weather was gorgeous. So very similar. Yeah, probably at least 300 or 400 cars, like twice what we expected.
Killer. I don't know what staff was working the BAT Instagram stories, but they were nailing it. I was eagerly following along and it looked killer.
Everyone was asking about you, man. You and Randy and Zach, everyone always wants to talk to you guys.
Oh, man. Yellow Enzo, is that there parked out front?
Yellow Enzo right up front by the tent, which was great. A bunch of NSXs, a really wide variety of cars. And then, of course, it was held at the facility of one of our power sellers, maybe number two, 911R, Matt Crandall is the name behind that one. He's been on the podcast before, and his facilities are awesome. Have you seen those?
I have not. I mean, he was a power seller with just a single location in Oregon, and he opened the Scottsdale one, and I imagine he has a whole staff there that's doing service and recon and all sorts of stuff. You had a front review to that last
week. Yeah, him and his wife largely was awesome. I think I'd met his wife briefly before at a Porsche event, but they're doing a lot of it, and they had some family members there, cousins and children helping out. And they've got a couple of staffers there. Really cool premises and a lot of awesome BAT cars either that have been on the site recently or that are about to show up, including some that are already sold. I recognize some sold cars in there. They said some folks buy them and then, you know, pay storage fees for a couple of weeks or months.
or collect as much free storage as they can before the pay kicks in.
Exactly right. Exactly right. So super awesome event. I know you love Scottsdale, so I wish you'd been there.
Oh, I do. The Hillstone on East Camelback is one of my all-time favorite places on the face of the earth.
There you go. Talk a little bit about your upcoming event. This is your old event, the Cal Mille.
Correct. My old man started it in 1991, and it was a kind of Swig family homespun deal up and through 2020, at which point we transitioned the ownership and running of it to Hagerty, which was honestly great because we don't have to deal with any of the headache of organizing and running and managing a moving circus of 80 cars and 160 people with sponsors and meals and all that sort of stuff. So we kind of get to go as the, I guess, honored guests, as it were, without any of the shrapnel of dealing with event management and organization. So it's been great. So we transitioned it to Hagerty 3 years ago. They do a great job running it. They've been a little more creative with starting locations. We always started at the Fairmont Hotel in San Francisco, and with a few exceptions, always had a route that was focused on Northern California. We'd occasionally go to Tahoe and bum around there, but Hagerty has started it in Southern California. This will be the second year. This starts at Torrey Pines, which will be neat for the old school aficionados out there. You may remember that SCCA ran events at Torrey Pines in the 50s and 60s. So that part of California definitely has its own automotive heritage and motorsports in a big way. But yeah, kicks off in Torrey Pines on Sunday evening. I don't know the route. Me and my brother used to, and my dad before us, would lay out the route every year and take 4 or 5 weekends and a yellow legal pad and drive around and do the notations and figure out where we were going and how we were going to string it all together. So we're not involved with that anymore, but Hagerty has one or two guys dedicated to that. They do a great job, I have to say. The route notes are killer, nearly idiot proof, which is kind of the point. And I think we set out from San Diego and head to the area of Palm Springs, couple nights there and make our way over to northern Southern California, kind of Malibu, Thousand Oaks area. But I don't actually know the exact route. So I kind of like going in with a bit of an air of mystery, not knowing what's behind every door.
Oh, man, I'm excited for you. It's gorgeous in California right now, so it's a good time. It's all green from all the rain we've had, at least out on the coast. It's not going to be green in Palm Springs.
No, it's great getting the kind of the true participant experience, having done it so long as kind of the event organizer, where everyone's coming up to you asking you questions, if there's problems, if there's road closures. Every day and every night, you're kind of stressing out about getting through the next day, kind of trouble-free. So that'll be fun. I'm going with my brother. We are driving a car that has been sitting up on our top rack for the better part of 10 years, which is a 1953 Alfa Romeo 1900 coupe with a Pininfarina steel body on it. So a very attractive, elegant looking car.
And that's the big four cylinder, right?
Correct.
Yeah. Okay. Bigger than it would have been in the 750 Sprint.
Correcto. Yeah. For a lot of those models in that era, but particularly the 1900, a number of the coach builders, the Carrozzeria, got their chance to make their own variant. So Pininfarina built in 1900, Zagato built in 1900, Ghia did some crazy 1900s, Alfa did an in-house, just the standard 1900 Berlina, which was probably the frumpiest of all of them. But definitely a car that looks faster than it is. We're going to be taking it pretty easy. We sent it to a Alfa expert mechanic, really cool guy down in LA, one of these guys who just restores cars in his garage. He's been working on it for the last 18 months. We sent it down to him with the goal that we would like to drive it in this event. And he assured us that that was a very doable task for him. So he's done all sorts of mechanical restoration to it and has got it humming along. Some of those conversations can kind of be like, well, customer, you pick the event and I'll pick the year. yeah. In this case, we tried to pick the event and the year. So with any luck, this thing will make it 1,000 miles next week and should be fun.
When was the last time you drove the car?
Man, my brother drove it on the Cal Miele in 2008, which probably was the last time it got any real miles.
17 years ago?
Yeah.
Wow.
So it's been...
Does it have drum brakes or is it disc brakes? It's drum. Probably in 53. Yeah. Wow.
Those big Alfa drums.
Oh, yeah. The finned.
Three-shoe drums.
Uh-huh. Yeah. Cool, man. That's going to be really, really fun. I'm jealous. Do you recognize some of the people or some of the old heads from the Swig days still doing it?
Yeah. The people on the event, it's a mix of old and new. A lot of the kind of my dad's generation, the OGs, have kind of filtered out. They've kind of picked up their tent and moved to a new camp, so to speak, or just kind of aged out of doing rallies and all that sort of stuff. But no, the entry list, guest list is awesome. The cars are awesome. This event is pre-57, so a lot of Giulietta's, 356s, 300SLs, DB2 Astons, a couple of Brave Souls always bring out some pre-war cars. There's always some pre-war Bentleys and Mercedes and Duesenbergs and all sorts of stuff. So I haven't seen a full entry list. I've seen a few names and cars that are going. Some cool Ferraris will be on it, some Maseratis. The guy's bringing his 200SI, which is neat. Always a lot of good Italian representation, as you would expect from a Mille Miglia themed event. So it's pumped. Next time I'll come on the pod in a few weeks, I'll give you
we need a download. I remember going to the, even before I knew you, going to the starts up at the Fairmont here in San Francisco, which was always fun. Took my kids. And I remember also the stress early days of BAT when we were doing BAT work, but you were also maybe 2-3 months ahead of time before the event would start. Your whole demeanor would change as you had to start dealing with the logistics of the coming up.
It's interesting to see how Hagerty has taken it and kind of professionalized the organization, which I think was probably, I think we did a good job, but that was much needed. You know, for example, we would just...
I mean, it was you and your brother, and then you'd have like a volunteer or two. It was very small.
We'd, have the starting location and date and time, and here's when registration is, but we sent no pre-event communications about the route, the weather. I mean, looking back, it was kind of, it's amazing we got away with that. It's kind of here, show up in San Francisco on April 30th, and we'll let you know what we're doing. amazingly, no one really requested much in the way of advance info. They kind of got that was how we did things. Now they have lots of pre-event comms and all sorts of lovely emails full of information and everything you want to know to spend a week on the road. But no, I'm stoked. It's going to be great.
Wonderful. I'm really excited for you. Does the vibe feel similar? I mean, still a drive through California with some great old, pre-57 cars, pre-58, I guess I should say.
Yeah. I mean, the cars are substantially the same. They have more mechanics. They've partnered with some mechanic shops. Vintage Underground is a cool shop in Southern Oregon. who has kind of taken up the responsibility of providing much of...
No more Conrad?
As far as I know, Conrad is still kind of the OG head mechanic.
Okay, and, great.
Interestingly, Conrad this year will be the only person on the event. My mother is not going. She would be the other person. Who has been on every single Cal Mille since the first one.
No kidding.
So Conrad has that very special distinction. I'm sure most of the people now in the event do not realize that, but I will make it a point to mention that because I think it's a pretty cool little fact.
Love that guy.
Yeah.
Oh, man. Is it about the same number of cars? What is it, 50?
Yeah, 65, 70.
Okay.
Yeah.
Wonderful. Man, I'm excited for that. Any other exciting events coming up? Any other car stuff?
Well, I'll say last year I invited Randy to come do the Cal Mille with me, and we had a blast, and that was awesome. So this will be a little different flavor driving with my brother this year. But man, a year ago going with Randy seems like a while back.
What did you guys took your white Alpha that?
We took a black Spider Veloce.
Oh, that's right.
We went to Yosemite, and it was great.
Amazing.
We had a nice time.
You and your brother. I've been on events with you and your brother. You and your brother spent a lot of time sitting next to each other on events.
Yeah, we sure have. We sure have.
That's great. Well, say hi to David for me, please. I love David. Any other events you have coming up? Any other car things on the horizon that are exciting that you want to let folks know about?
Man, we were talking in the office before coming up here. Got to decide if I want to enter a car in Monterey this year. I've got this little 996 Cup car I drove at Rennsport. I would love to drive that car at Daytona, which is a very achievable goal. All you got to do is pay the entry fee and ship the car there.
Get on the banking.
Yeah, given that at Rennsport, I bought an extra set of tires and it rained one race and the next race was basically full course yellow the whole time because there was a crash on the first lap. I got all these fresh tires sitting around. So my kind of racing budget dysmorphia is telling me that I've already paid forward a
You've
lot of the expense.
The cost. Yeah.
To do another event. So why not do it?
When's the deadline for that? When do you have to make a decision on Monterey?
Oh, I'm sure the deadline is way past.
So to call in favors.
I'm one of these guys that just thinks I can just show up anytime and enter.
Yeah, great. Yeah. That's probably accurate. By the way, Huff is looking for you. He cruised by earlier, our buddy Jim Huff, and he got into Monterey with his NK race car. So he's all excited about that. So hopefully we'll see him there. He's doing the prehistorics and the historics. What else? Summertime is rallies. I've got Lufka Cult coming up. I'm really looking forward to that. That's the air water thing in SoCal. You're talking about maybe making an appearance, which I hope you do. Anytime in LA with Howard Swig is fun.
No, yeah. I'm going to wake up in Thousand Oaks next Friday morning and got to figure out what I'm doing.
Yeah.
So maybe we can go to Craig's for dinner or have a nice little LA high-end meal.
Musso and Frank's. Last time I stayed at this hotel where I'm staying, I think I told you John Hamm was sitting right next to us. So elbows with the celebs in a fancy cocktail bar. So I thought in terms of things we could talk about, you mentioned non-vehicle listings being kind of an interesting topic. We sell increasingly what we call automobilia, but that takes many forms. It could be parts or wheels or seats or artwork or luggage or any number of things, wall displays. But
57 Chevy style sofas.
Totally. The infamous 59 Cadillac wall art, all that stuff. Not something that we always did, but we do a lot of it now. And a lot of it goes for kind of amazing prices, engine coffee tables, all that kind of stuff. I'd be curious to hear what some of your favorites are, but maybe you could talk a little bit about the history of how we started listing that stuff on Bring a Trailer. Cause it wasn't always the case that we did it, or we did it kind of in sparingly, but now it's a pretty sizable chunk of our business.
Yeah. I would say we were always open to cool non-vehicle property.
Remember the prancing horse statue? That was an early one that I remember.
Yeah. In the early days, I think we limited that to only kind of really special stuff. And every year we'd list a little more, experiment with an engine or a neon sign or some special restored carburetors or whatever it might be. And that compounded over the course of several years. And we became kind of a main player in the kind of automobilia, memorabilia market. And I would argue probably one of the best places to sell some of this stuff. And fast forward to today, I don't know how many lots we're going to list this year, but it's going to be on the order of, you know, a few thousand lots of automobilia. And
43 live auctions right now for various parts and memorabilia.
Yeah.
As of right now, as we're speaking.
I mean, I come at this from kind of the curation angle when all this stuff is coming in the door. And as we've sold more, we naturally have had more of this stuff submitted. And I have some of the most fun sorting through our submissions for this stuff because you see all sorts of crazy things, right? And we probably turn away way more of this stuff than we do cars, right? Cars are all sorts of cool stuff coming through, but we those are pretty known quantities for us, barring a few exceptions here and there. But with the memorabilia side of the coin, I mean, I've never learned so much about Wienermobile go-karts and totally. Rupp Chevys and
Those twin-engine go-karts, man, those are on a run. They seem to come in waves, right? People see a couple Rupp twin-engine go-karts sell for a bunch of dough, and then they all come out of the woodworks.
And some of the stuff people get, I mean, I just think it really adds to the kind of balance and variety of the site. I love loading our parts and automobilia page for folks out there who don't know about that. That's the best landing page to see all the non-vehicle stuff we're selling. I have really been excited by some really neat neon signage mm-hmm. that we've been listing, kind of the ultimate garage decorative pieces. Some of this stuff is super high end. It goes for big bucks. We had a Chris Craft boat neon sign that sold recently. So much of it, Alex, as you know, is like the image. Like, is it
totally?
Is the artwork really compelling? Is it? Some of it is newer, but especially the vintage, really authentic stuff in period. Buick service signs and like a Bosch light up sign is meh, but like the Bosch one that has the Ferrari ignition specificity on the bottom, like it's kind of like the Warhol Campbell soup paintings, totally. Right? You get the white bean one, which is the rare one, rather than just the tomato. All that sort of stuff, man. I love seeing it.
I do too. I've always enjoyed it. And I think for our community members, this is the stuff they get excited to do. My dad was always obsessed with those old glass gas pumps, you know, the ones that have the glass indicator up at the top. And I think we've listed a few of those, but those, I remember when people started restoring those and you couldn't have a cool car guy garage without having one of those in them. And everyone wants the big wall art pieces too. And we're listing all kinds of stuff.
Wire sculptures. I wonder
how did that start? We've got so many wire sculptures now. I mean, F40s and other things.
Yeah. Shower thought I had recently with some of the stuff we're selling. I wonder if like production of it has it increased. People see this market and they're an artist and they want to make the F40, the Gullwing, the 250 GTO wire sculpture, whatever the theme is. People seem to love that stuff.
Totally. Totally. We sell a ton of wheels too. For a long time, it was just Fuchs, but now we've got all kinds of interesting stuff on that front. One thing I noticed, I don't know if you noticed this trend, kind of like toy cars. We had a coin operated like helicopter toy. We had, you mentioned the Wienermobile. I think we had maybe two Wienermobile pedal cars. That's really taken off recently. My kids even get excited about that stuff.
Yeah. And on the curation angle, it's tough, right? Because you got to evaluate this stuff for how cool it is, how authentic it is, how substantial it is, right?
Sure.
Like someone that wants to sell a kind of a Porsche wall clock was made 5 years ago. Like that's kind of in the discard pile. Not to say it's not cool and it would work for someone, but the more of this stuff we've sold successfully, the more people are wanting to sell with us, and the spectrum of quality and quantity for the stuff we're sifting through gets bigger by the day. So some of it is kind of like, is this kind of just some rusty old carburetors that were sitting on this guy's shelf? Is this, you know, three wheels for Lincoln Continental? Like, some of this stuff is a hard no. Some of it's kind of like, this guy actually made a pretty compelling case of why these are special and he's a nice guy and he sold before.
Sometimes people go nuts on the presentation for these things, you know, underside photos of your pedal car. And, you know, at least for my team, for the production side of things, you know, the provenance is hard to pin down on a lot of these. And we want to do justice to the descriptions of these too. So the more info somebody presents, the more passionate they are about it, the better. And then, of course, that reflects with the community, right? Like, I mean, we want people to comment on these listings and click on them and get excited about them and ultimately bid on them. So, you know, if it's a compelling story and a cool presentation, there's a lot to be said for it.
There was a guy who wanted to sell his 59 Cadillac kind of sofa.
Yeah.
You're kind of like, yeah. He was like, but I've got a cool Chevy Bel Air style kind of love seat and also like an Ottoman footrest. So we kind of did a
full
little
set.
Living room presentation. And that was awesome. Like, as you said, like if they can put some thought into the creative marketing of it, it can be cool.
Just before we started recording, I told you Jim Huff was over here. He was looking for you and he was like, what's going on with all these seats? I mean, these $10,000, $12,000, $15,000 Porsche seats. So that's another one that's been really interesting to me. People have a hard time finding those Recaros for the long hood 911s. And I think he was looking at searching for Shieldman seats for old BMWs. So that's another one of these parts that, that people get really excited about and that are frankly hard to find, right? Some of these things are actually really hard to find. Rochester injection systems, that kind of stuff.
I mean, it probably our single biggest for things we list
non-car.
Some frequency is, yeah, Porsche sport bucket seats, 997 or whatever the generation is. Those are like pretty consistently $15,000, $16,000, $17,000, $18,000. And if you want those, right, you can go do a little Google search. You could probably go to Renlist. You can probably go, you would know, Alex, I don't know, but I think that we're probably a more and more of a number one destination.
You want those skinny early Fuchs, right? The 4.5-inch wide Fuchs. You gotta come to bring a trailer, I guess, these days. That made me think we've sold a lot of F40 parts. Like I think we've had nose cones, seats, maybe a steering wheel. We sold an F40 engine. And I remember that just reminded me of a facetious comment. Pretty soon you could put a F40 together if you stay out and bring a trailer long enough, get each part, buy it part by part. But it's great. I love seeing all of it.
We sold some really dope Weber 40 DCN9 carbs with intake manifold for a V12 60s Ferrari, but restored, nicely polished, presented beautifully. Those went for $20,000, right? So some of these, as the values of a lot of these cars have gone up, naturally the parts have followed suit, and especially for some of the special carburetors and other kind of drivetrain engine components. Good luck finding them, right? So when the right parts pop up on a big forum like BAT, then people are after them.
Yeah, not a lot of F40 engines floating around. That also made me think of some of the early non-vehicle listings that I remember were owner's manuals and kind of like collections of memorabilia. And I remember we had a 906 owner's manual where the guy who had the chassis number that matched that manual found it. And it's like, that's literally a one-of-one pairing, right? If you've got that Porsche 906 and you want the manual that came with that car, there's only one of them. And that guy was able to find it and reunite it with the car, which is pretty awesome.
What else, Alex? We've been on phone calls, Zoom calls, but it's good to connect with you one-on-one, given everything we got going through.
It's good to see you face-to-face. It brings some energy to the office. It's
nice. I see you about once. I see you in person about once every 10,000 lots we sell. So we gotta improve on that.
That's our cadence. No, it is good to have you back here. Is it good to be back in California?
It's great to be back. Yeah, I'm loving it. I got the good weather. We got some interesting stuff. Ending tomorrow, we have I've always had a sweet spot for 67 GT500 fastbacks.
Yes.
We got a dark blue one, inboard fogs. I know we've probably talked ad nauseum about that particular car.
I'll talk about those cars all you want. We had Comer on. We were talking about those. Yeah,
there you go.
Those cars.
There you go. I probably ought to get one of those one of these days.
That'd be a really good event car. When I was down in Arizona, I was thinking again about the Copper State, which is such a great event. And that's like Mustang Central. And that's like a perfect car for those big, straight Arizona roads. You want a lot of horsepower, something like your Alpha would be screaming its guts out on some of those roads.
No bueno.
Yeah, totally. You want something that's comfortable cruising at 100 miles an hour. Those are great cars. Anything else interesting on the site right now that's got you excited?
You know, what never fails to amaze me is the BAT community's ability to discern between kind of good, great, and exceptional, and the results that correspond to each of those listings. We had an original owner, 1980-82 911 SC Coupe.
Oh, yes.
Minerva Blue. That was a local car that sold for like $120,000, which kind of, when you're sifting through results, that kind of jumps off the page. And then you dive into it and it was like the one, right? One owner, guy spent a bunch of time and money getting it ready for sale. Super honest, original car, pretty rare color.
California blue plates. I saw that car.
The whole deal.
Our boy Back, shout out Back, was downstairs worked up about that event, about that result.
I bet he was.
There's also, I pointed out to him, there's also a really, another very strong impact bumper result, that ice blue 84 Carrera. Did you see that car sold for 85 or 90 grand?
Yeah.
Another great color. He was saying people want colors back in their lives. That was his opinion, and which I think is true, right? Especially for some of these Porsches, which I know color matters a lot to people on those. But everything's grayscale now, so it's nice. I mean, that Minerva Blue looks awesome on that old SC.
Yeah, that was a big result for an awesome car. I've been surprised at kind of just the resiliency of certain models and markets, like mid to late 70s Eldorados and Continentals. Like, man, I don't know where that market was 10 years ago, but people love those things. And we've sold some really nice ones for big bucks. And I don't personally have a circle of car friends that are driving around in 76 Eldo convertibles, but you know what? There's a whole bunch of people out there that are, and they care a lot. And we seem to get a lot of the good ones that are moving through. So yeah, 79 Eldorado Vert Brome Edition. I mean, my knowledge base of that stuff is beyond what I ever could have dreamed. I don't know if that's good or bad.
My knowledge base is limited, but I'll tell you, after being in Scottsdale, I'd cruise around in one of those cars or in Palm Springs. That's about right. Put the top down. My daughter and I rented a modern BMW convertible when we were down in Arizona, and in those warm nights, man, putting the top down, there's nothing like it. You don't need to go fast. It's fine to just cruise around with a big land yacht. I'd be down for that.
My dad was always into 50s caddies. We had a Series 62 convertible. What was that? What would that be? 57?
Yes, that's about right. Yeah.
But that had an LS2 engine in it.
Whoa.
Yeah, you may have missed that. Well, that this is a kind of modern motor swap that sold for almost $200,000. But that was cool because, I mean, just the work involved to make that happen is substantial. And there's some amount of imagination that whoever dreamt up the idea of having that car and putting that motor in it, then hundreds of thousands of people see that and bring a trailer and say, oh, yeah, actually, that is cool. I wish I had thought of that. And you know what? You don't have to build it. You can just buy it already done. That was an American favorite of mine.
Did he have a lot of weeks. He had a lot of 50s caddies, your dad?
He had a few over the years. He was into the early cars that ran in Le Mans.
Yeah. Cunningham, right? Cunningham ran the Cadillac.
The 50 Cadillac. Yep. We had a couple 50 caddies. So early cars.
Did you ever have a 59 with the big, huge fins?
Yeah, he had some of those too throughout the years. Yeah, some Verts and that and Chrysler 300s all that sort of stuff.
Letter series cars are doing it for me recently. I'm getting old and packing on weight in the midsection, Howard. I'm ready for a letter series Chrysler. Randy's car really converted me on those, but I like the later ones with the big cross rim wedge in them. We've had a couple of those. We actually had a really good result on a 300G convertible, black, sold for like $120,000 or something.
300G convertibles. We can hear the audience falling asleep.
I know. Sorry. We can move on to something else, but I do love those cars.
Hey, why do you think I want to drive this 1900 next week? It's kind of like the Italian version of driving a 57 Thunderbird down the road. Comfortable cruiser. Nothing too exciting is going to happen, and I don't need it to.
Something to be said for that. Enjoy your time driving down the road. We don't want to put people to sleep, so let's pivot one more time. I have one more exercise for you that I wanted to kind of hit you with. We can make it a lightning round if we want, but it's been suggested to me a couple times that folks would love to hear us answer the question of the week, which we post once a week to the website, and it usually gets, you know, amongst our, you know, most traction for non-auction posts. We have a lot of interesting ones. Our community engagement team puts those up on the website. And I wrote a couple down here. I didn't prep you for this at all. Can I run through a few of these and see what sticks?
I have to admit, I don't really look at our question of the week, but I know a lot of people do. So this will be extra
great admission.
Cold open for me.
Great admission. And also,
this is a safe space, right?
It is a safe space. Yeah. And then also, we really get a fresh take from you here. Let's see. Where should I start? Well, let's start with a soft one. A couple of weeks ago, we had, what's your favorite JDM vehicle? And you and your brother, you don't always talk about JDM cars, but you and your brother, especially I think your brother, have an interest in those cars. Are there things that pop to your brain, you know, when I say JDM that particularly interest you or excite you?
Well, we do. We have a long history of being kind of a Japanese car family. My dad was a dealer for Toyota and Isuzu.
You were cruising around in an SVX the first time I met you. You had that silver Subaru SVX.
Yeah, we had the SVX. We've got a couple of Datsun 510s. We've got a very cool 75 Celica RA28. So that's actually a Swiss market car, but you know, I have to say, been hanging around Zach for a few years. He's piqued my interest in Skylines and stuff of that ilk. So if you ask me right now, I would say that, yeah, like a NERSpec Skyline is up there for me.
Have you ever driven any of those?
I have not.
Have you ever driven one of the old ones, like a Hakkasuka or anything?
But I drove a lot of Gran Turismo 1 and 2 back in the day.
Yeah, that's where everyone got hooked on those things. That was the first place I heard about a Skyline, was on Gran Turismo. I think like a lot of people our age. Okay, that's good. That was a softball, Howard. I'll get into the weirder stuff. One of the ones recently that got me thinking, and I meant to ask one of our guests that we had on recently about this, what's the coolest car key that you can think of, like an ignition key? That got my brain turning when I saw that. And I immediately thought of the Porsche 917 key, which is drilled for lightness. You know, they drilled through the top of the fob. I used to work on cars, so I've seen a bunch of weirdo keys. But is there anything that comes to your brain when you hear me say that?
What comes to my brain is a short story, if you'll allow
good,
me to tell
yeah,
it.
Good, yeah, that's what we're here for.
We were at the Ypsilanti, Michigan, like the Arcane car show, a summer show for a bunch of kind of...
Who's we? This is you and your old man?
Me and my old man. This is maybe circa 2008, 2009. He had just bought a 49 Hudson Commodore.
Oh, right.
It was on...
That's in keeping with all the stories you've been telling.
Grassy field. In Ypsilanti, Michigan, there is the Hudson Museum. I don't know if it's still there or not. I imagine it probably is. We were sitting there, lawn chairs, whatever. The key had fallen out of my dad's pocket to the car, and there was some very tall grass, and we couldn't find it. Now, he felt like an idiot.
Yep.
So what are we going to do? We don't have the key to our 49 Hudson. So he kind of knows the guy that runs the Hudson Museum. Of course he does. This some old guy, 90 years old, is sitting there. and tell him our problem. He says, oh, well, you know, some of those Commodore keys, like there were some level of similarity, like it's not just one-to-one. So I got a whole box of keys. And my dad said, great, Howard, why don't you go through the box and, you know, try to match up ones that look similar and bring out 10 or 15 to the car. We'll see if they worked. And one of them worked.
Started the car.
Yeah. And we drove back to California in it.
That's fantastic. Yeah. Not so great for 50s Hudson security, but.
I mean, what are the odds, man? I couldn't believe it.
You drove that car back to California after that?
Yeah.
Ypsilanti is where, that's where Willow Run is, right? The huge.
Correct.
Yeah. Okay. That's what I thought.
Correct.
Cool. Man, that sounds like a fun trip and a fun thing. I also love Hudsons. I, again, don't want to put people to sleep, but I love
Hudsons. So no, the key itself was not very exciting, but having located a spare Hudson Commodore key kind of on demand within an hour or two, I thought was a pretty good story.
That is a great story. It reminds me, that actually jogged my memory for the worst key loss story I had. We had when I was in high school, my dad bought a C36 AMG, the very first American. He was the boxy C class, the first C class, and it had a big honking straight six, I think 3.6 liter, a great car. I loved that car. We had a 500E at the same time, and I actually remember enjoying the C36 more. Anyway, I took a bunch of buddies down to the LA Auto Show, which used to be a big thing to see all the cars debut. I was probably a junior, a senior. No, I was a freshman in college. So this is like 2002. And as a 19-year-old, you want to sit in all the cars. That's the reason you go, right? Sit in all the new models. And at some point, the key to the C-Class, which I took my buddies down in, fell out. Never going to find it again. So we're stuck in LA. I had a buddy who was going to UCLA come pick us up, and we sat in his dorm room while a very patient friend of ours drove from San Luis Obispo down to LA to bring the spare key down to us. Not a great moment for me, but a good friend.
Wow.
I should reach out to that guy and thank him again.
What were some of the crazy answers from the BAT audience on that question?
I have it pulled up right here. The feature photo is the Volkswagen key VW in the fob. They've got some Jaguar stuff. The winner was Alfa Zagato, 60s Jaguar key. It's got kind of a flying wing set up at the top. I think a lot of people like the keys that have kind of elaborate shapes to them, fancy shapes.
Yeah, the key itself is almost like a piece of jewelry.
Totally. I remember a car that's on the site that I really like is the Vetro Racina 308 GTB. I love 308 GTBs, and the fiberglass cars are kind of the ultimate. And a 308, I don't know if you've ever driven one, they have a little tiny key. It's like a valet, and it's even smaller than a valet key that opens the door and opens and turns on the ignition. You feel like you're going to break it when you're turning it in the locks. Can I hit you with a few more of these?
Let's go.
All right. I'm going to work into the weirder stuff. How about comfiest vehicle you've ever sat in? Does anything come to mind?
Well, I mean, you talked about the Subaru SVX. That's right up there. And I mean, that's one finger on the steering wheel max cruising down the road.
Because it's easy to drive, or because the seats are comfortable?
No, because the seats are like a Barca lounger. It's like a Lazy Boy.
I remember you actually thought quite highly of that car. I'd always liked them. And I remember you gave me a ride in it one time. It was actually kind of quick, and it was seemed really well built. I really liked that.
Well, when I was 8 years old, I sat in the passenger seat as my dad did 140 in one down Route 447, which is the road that goes to Gerlach and goes to Burning Man, if you know it from that, in northwestern Nevada.
So, man, that's just about terminal velocity in one of those.
Yeah,
cars,
so from an early age, I always thought that was kind of like a supercar. Obviously, it's not, but 8 years old going 140 miles an hour, it definitely felt like it.
What are the things that you think of in terms of making a comfortable car? You know, it's interesting that GT3 that I have, it's very stiff and everyone's like, oh, you can't road trip that car. But I think of it as very comfortable because those hardback sport seats, you don't have back pain after driving it all day, which like is not exactly comfort, but is actually something where you get out at the end of the day and you're not in pain and stooped over. So there's kind of different ways to think about car comfort.
Yeah. Like, I mean, a 79 Lincoln Continental Cartier edition has a nice old bench there, which you can have the miles go by in absolute comfort.
You've been on some really long road trips too. So but usually in kind of older cars or cars that aren't particularly comfortable.
On the flip side, maybe it was just like an old seat that needed to be padded, but I did a rally in a Dino 246, and man, my lower back was killing me. Yes. After 5-6 hours, I could barely get out of that thing.
You've kind of got a weird angle in those too, right? Don't you kind of lean back with your, okay. What about that Queen Mother that you drove?
Yeah, that was comfy. We took that on the Copper State in 19, which was an awesome car for that. We had some vapor lock issues in some not so great places. So that helped to have the comfy seat when you're losing power in a huge traffic concentrated area and trying not to get creamed in the rear. Yeah, no, that's pretty comfy.
There's something to be said for reliability. Reliability helps with comfort, peace of mind, or even quietness, right? A loud car can be less than comfortable. That's an interesting question. All right, let me get into some weirder ones here. Most challenging turn in motorsports. You're a much better person to ask than me. What's the corkscrew like? I've only driven through it a few times. You've been through it many hundreds of times. Is that a challenging turn?
No, it's not that challenging. It's kind of a low-speed corner, so it's I don't find it that challenging. People say there's a tree you can look at and point at. I don't know if that's true or not. A challenging corner, which I only know from video games, not from real life, but I believe it's turn one at Brands Hatch, which is a very fast, like fourth gear, shallow right, but over a crest. Oof. So you have some elevation change. It's a little off camber. It's a high-speed corner, and I would love to run Brands Hatch in the flesh one day, but
they do anything that you could take your 996 to?
I'm sure they do.
That would be a good one. Eau Rouge, famously dangerous, although I've heard people say that's maybe a little bit of a myth, or maybe it was the cars in period that made it scary. I've only driven that one in video games and watched it on YouTube.
I think F1 was just at Suzuka, right? Suzuka, one of my favorite tracks from video games back in the day. I could drive that with my eyes closed. So there's some corners.
What's the trickiest one at Seca? That's where you have like a lot of your, at Laguna, that you have a lot of your track time there. Is it turn 11, the slow one onto the front straight? What's tricky there?
The trickiest corner is probably turn 6, which is the left going up the hill, because you can carry a lot more speed than you think. So there's some amount of trusting that the grip and the road is there.
Sure.
I'd probably say 6 or turn 3 for similar reasons.
You've driven so many tracks. You've driven Big Willow, right?
I've driven a deceptively small amount of tracks.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah, I've never driven Button Willow.
Oh, interesting.
I've never driven Willow Springs.
Big Willow has, I think it's 8-9. They're the two right-handers. Decreasing radius onto the front straight are tricky, and I've had some ugly offs there. But I don't have a very good answer for this one.
Yeah.
But I thought you might. You've really disappointed us, Howard.
Hey, Brands Hatch turn one. That's a nice
pull. Good. That's a good pull.
I hope someone can either confirm or correct me on that. But
what's the one? There's a famous corner that had a tree in the middle of the apex for a long time. Was that at Brands Hatch?
At VIR, there's that famous corner.
Maybe that's what it is. It's like a hairpin with a corner on the inside apex.
Beautiful tree, like oak tree with like the barn in the on the exit.
Another one that this makes me think about is, and I think we're going to have an event there this year, Pittsburgh Grand Prix, where we've gone before, where people race through the park and there's curbs on it. I would also imagine almost any corner on the Isle of Man TT where you're like operating at extremely high speed between curbs, like real curbs for sidewalks, would be pretty tricky.
Going farther afield, if you want to talk corners at cool tracks, Bathurst in Australia is one of my favorite tracks.
That has the really like sixth gear wide open, like 200-mile-an-hour corner, right?
Mount Panorama Circuit at Bathurst. A number of corners there that, again, video game only experience for me, but can be a little hairy.
I've watched, is it Australian Supercar? Whatever the sedans are, the Falcons and the Commodores. Very high speed. And that also has that tremendous elevation change, does it not?
Yep.
Yeah, and all the beer drinking. Would love to go to Bathurst sometime. All right, let me hit you with one more, and then we can do parting shots. We can close things down. What about the spookiest car you've ever been in? I bet you have. I was really excited to ask you this one because you've driven so many old cars. You've raced really old cars too. It could be in terms of scariest to drive, sketchiest thing that made you feel. We actually posted this one around Halloween, so it was about kind of scars,
cars that
are haunted.
But I mean,
in terms of cars that are sketchy or made you nervous to drive, what comes to mind?
Man, what were some of the any standout answers from that?
I mean, people talked about, you know, Corvairs with swing axles folding underneath them and stuff. And I've driven, you know, pre-war cars where the brakes are barely working and they're not running and you're worried about whether you're going to make it up the hill and you're downshifting gear to gear. But I don't have anything that ever felt super dangerous. Certainly never anything that felt possessed. I've had some cars that ran terribly, but
Oh man, my experience riding with people has been the most scary thing.
I hate that too. Yeah. I like to be in charge.
Maybe driving like an old pre-war Bentley with a crash box and you're going down a twisty road and being able to shift gears properly can be quite challenging and require a large amount of skill and finesse. And if you're going down a big hill and you need to get your blower Bentley down a gear and you can't, and it doesn't have very good brakes, that can be somewhat of a harrowing moment. So I don't know how scary that is, but there are some cars that...
Depends whether it's your car or not.
Yeah, I would say require an extra level of mechanical prowess to evacuate properly. And when you need to do that and you can't, or you can't find the magic in the moment, then you can find yourself maybe in a little bit of trouble. But
have you ever driven something with cable brakes before, with mechanical brakes?
No, never.
No, me neither.
Like an old Bugatti with the outside deal that they're pulling. Yeah.
How about anything with non-standard pedal setup, where the clutch, gas, and brake are in different locations? Have you ever driven a Model T or anything like that?
Yeah, I mean, a center throttle on some old Alphas and other stuff of that era. That's just a psychological challenge to remember that you're not driving a car with the gas on the right.
All right.
Yeah.
All right. Maybe nothing terribly spooky then. You've got a lot of mechanical confidence, Howard. You've driven a lot of things.
I don't know. Maybe I don't know if it's confidence. Maybe it's, I don't know, insubordination. maybe I ought to strap into a Can-Am car and then come back and tell you how that was.
Yeah, that could be probably plenty terrifying. Cool, dude. Well, thanks for running through that exercise with me. There's like a million more of those. We could do that again sometime.
This flew by. We've been doing this for 40 minutes. This flew by, Alex.
Anything else you want to talk about? Any other, any parting shots? Anything else you want to let folks know about?
Man, we might be doing an event in Europe in a couple months. So TBD on the details for that.
Keep your eyes on the calendar.
Yeah, we're sorting out a few details, but that is something that I would definitely love to go there. I haven't been to Europe since 2017, so I'm due for a little Euro road trip.
Awesome. Maybe something with mechanical brakes, something not comfortable.
I was going to try to hit up some cool cars we have coming up that we're going to list or that are alive. I don't know if anything was on your radar. I know you always love a good Vincent Black Shadow motorcycle.
We've had some really good Vincents recently.
We've got one of those now. We've got some recently. There's been some mixed emotions on the Vector M12 we have.
What do you mean by that? I thought people would be excited. It's our first Vector. People have been asking for that.
No, Vector is a kind of a polarizing car, I think.
Iconoclastic.
You know? It is. It truly is.
I think that's kind of cool. That's probably the better Vector, right? This is the one that's kind of Lamborghini based. They're not really my cup of tea, although they are striking cars for sure.
We have another Toyota Mega Cruiser.
Oh yeah, those are super interesting. Big Humvee looking vehicle.
Yeah, kind of a Hummer and LM002 competitor.
I don't know, but they've got a little four-cylinder diesel in them, right? So they've got the look, but maybe not they've got a little dinky four-cylinder in them, those Mega Cruisers, I think.
And then we have a recreation of one of my all-time favorite cars, which is an Alpha 8C23.
Oh, that car is great with the two four-cylinders smashed together to make a straight eight.
Yeah, this recreation seems like it's pretty true in its proportions and overall kind of look, but 8C Monzas are high on the list for me.
Functional supercharger on that. And it's somebody made a joke in that listing. I saw they called it a Persang. I don't know if that means that this is the company that turned into Persang. I don't think so, because Persang was around in the 70s and 80s, right?
You'd have to ask your friends at NHTSA about that.
Yeah, okay. Let's not dig into that. We actually have I was talking about this earlier today too. We have a Persang coming up to be listed soon. Type 35 replica, Type 35 Bugatti replica that has a recreation, really, is what those cars are. Also straight eight, also supercharged like this 8C replica, and California SB100 bar sticker. So it's running around with California plates, California legal, essentially Type 35 Bugatti, which would be pretty strong.
Awesome. Well, this is good, Alex. Let's run this back next week when we're both back from our different automotive LA excursions. That should be fun.
Heck yes, dude. I'm in. Thanks, Howard. Appreciate you doing this. I look forward to doing it next time. Thanks to everyone who listened. Feedback, questions, concerns, hate mail to podcast@bringatrailer.com. We will see you next time.